Hey there, it's Lars. Thanks for checking out the Lars Larson podcasting experience and have a fantastic day.
Would you like 2023 to be tax-free? Hey, it's Lars. Then make plans to join David Moore for a free webinar Wednesday, March 29th at 10 a.m. Pacific time for the latest 1031 exchange news and updates. For those asking for the nitty-gritty of a 1031 exchange, this is your class to learn the basics of the 1031 exchange, what qualifies, and how to apply the process. In this webinar, you'll learn the lingo, a glossary of terms, what you should know about doing an exchange in 2023, the benefits and pitfalls, and flipping with a 1031 exchange. If you're an Oregon broker, this 1031 exchange class provides attendees with 1 hour of core real estate continuing education and the knowledge to identify and apply the 1031 exchange to client investment real estate transactions. Plus, anybody who signs up gets a copy of the slides and a link to view the session again. For more information and registration, go to 1031exchange.com. You've worked hard to earn your money. Equity Advantage works hard to keep it yours. Happy Wednesday, and boy, is it a target-rich environment today. Let me give you an idea of where it stands. The governor of Washington State says that a lot of you, and yours truly, me, are actually mass murders waiting to happen. And he actually used those words. He said, because of who we are and because of what we've chosen to do under the American Constitution, we are just mass murders waiting to happen. Let me back that up in just a moment. But before I get there, get this. The Biden administration is now bribing at least one Northwest city. I expect there will be more, to ban gasoline and diesel trucks from their downtown areas. Now, as usual with the government, they say it's just a pilot program. A couple of million of your federal tax dollars are, in this case, going to the city of Portland. And what is it for? A new pilot project that would restrict a stretch of downtown to zero emissions delivery vehicles. What does that mean? It means that 16 square blocks of downtown Portland, as I said, I figure Seattle and Spokane and Tri-Cities and Eugene will probably all get similar bribes to do this. And they managed to buy off the knuckleheads at Portland City Hall with just $2 million, which in federal grant terms is like a rounding error. It's like dust that flies off the federal budget as your money is getting spent. And what are they talking about doing? Taking a 16-square-block area, that's 4 blocks by 4 blocks, 16 blocks of the center of a downtown area, in this case in Portland, and they are saying you will not be able to drive a gasoline or diesel-powered delivery vehicle into that area. Now, the minute I saw this, I understand that there are people down at City Hall, I'm tempted to call them whores, but if you offer them a few bucks and say, hey, can you do something really stupid to your downtown? I mean, your downtown is already suffering. It's full of drug-addicted campers. It's full of crime. It's full of violence. And businesses are leaving left and right. I've got a great idea. Why don't you tell all those businesses, you can't have anything delivered in a gasoline or diesel-powered truck. Now, understand who this affects. Every time there's a construction project, does anybody know of an electric-powered truck that is capable of delivering concrete? Do you know of anybody who's got an electric-powered truck that can deliver rebar, reinforcing steel bar? You know what that stuff weighs. You know how big it is. Can you imagine an electric-powered truck that could deliver, I don't know, 40 or 50,000 pounds of steel or concrete or lumber or anything else? And even if you get past that, I assume they're going to tell all those businesses, hey, the next time those knuckleheads come down from Antifa or BLM and bust all your windows out, best tell the glass replacement company you can't drive your gasoline-powered rig to bring the brand new windows down there. And if you're doing a remodel or, God forbid, a construction project, can you imagine? This business is sitting in the middle, whatever business it is sitting in the middle of 16 square blocks of a downtown major metro area, 23rd biggest city in America, and you can't deliver anything with gas or diesel. It has to be zero emissions only. Now, I think this is insane. Even for the little neighborhood coffee shop, whether it's the burned beans of Starbucks or maybe something decent from Dutch Brothers, whichever one it is. Can you imagine them telling the company that comes probably every other day to deliver milk and coffee and food and all the other things that are consumed? Can you imagine a restaurant trying to exist within that kind of environment being told, yeah, sure, you can have all the food you want delivered. Just have somebody bring it on a bicycle or in an electric-powered truck. Now, I think we're getting a little over our skis on this one because they don't have trucks that will deliver most of that stuff on a regular basis. And if you say, well, I want to arrange for a specialty delivery, we'd like the same stuff you bring us, only you have to bring it in an electric-powered vehicle. Can you imagine the guy or gal taking that order? Oh, yeah, sir, we'll be glad to deliver it in a rickshaw if you want. You're just going to have to pay a whole lot more. So this is the latest nonsense. It is today's Twitter poll. Should Northwest cities ban gasoline and diesel-powered delivery trucks from their downtown area? And if you think, well, at least passenger vehicles are safe, oh, I don't think so. Think about that one for just a moment. Can you imagine if they're banning businesses from getting deliveries made by gas and diesel-powered trucks? Do you really think they're going to let you drive your car down there for very long? Think about London, England, where they literally tag people for $15 to $20 if they want to drive their gasoline-powered car into town. And imagine what it's going to do to all your customers. I'm not coming to your store. You can't get anything delivered, and I can't drive my car there. They haven't gone to the personal passenger vehicles yet, but for now, no start date on this either. But they say gas-powered, traditional gas-powered delivery vehicles will be prohibited from entering that part of downtown, four square blocks. And do we know which four blocks? Not yet, but we'll find out for you. Second issue, Governor Jay Inslee has accused me and probably a lot of you of being just a mass murder waiting to happen. And he actually used the words. He said that if you own an AR-15, I own a few, I imagine some of you own an AR-15 or another semi-automatic rifle, the kind that Jay Inslee signed a law to ban the sale and the transfer and basically any other use of it. If you've already got it, you can keep it. But he says, quote, there is no reason for that AR-15 other than mass murder. Now, I don't know. A lot of people I know own AR-15s or AK-47s or other variants on a semi-automatic rifle. Are any of you mass murderers? And if so, call the show. We'd love to have that interview. So all of this, Jay Inslee says, these weapons of war, assault weapons, have no reason other than mass murder. Quote, their only purpose is to kill humans as rapidly as possible in large numbers. This guy is a knucklehead. But worse than that, he's declared that a whole bunch of people who are citizens of the state that he's governor of are just mass murders waiting to happen. House Bill 1240 signed into law on Tuesday, and it essentially went into effect immediately because Clark County, among others, immediately stopped processing all purchase orders that were being approved or up for approval by the county. And what they said was the legislature finds and declares that gun violence is a threat to the public health and safety of Washingtonians. Assault weapons are civilian versions of weapons created for the military and are designed to kill human beings quickly and efficiently. Well, I guess you could say the car I've got parked in the driveway is a civilian version of a NASCAR race car. I guess you could say that. You could say that, actually, I think a whole bunch of Boeing passenger jets are actually civilian versions of military cargo planes that Boeing got paid to design. And then they said, hey, this is a pretty good design. Why don't we set it up with seats and a luggage area? And they did exactly that. There are a lot of things in life. The Jeep, if you drive a Jeep, why, that's just a civilian version of a vehicle of war. I guess if you're listening to a knucklehead like Jay Inslee. It's a Wednesday. It's my pleasure to be with you. Check out the Twitter poll. Should Northwest cities ban gas and diesel delivery trucks from their downtown areas? I'm a big no on that. And you're listening to the Lars Larson Show and the Radio Northwest Network.
That makes a lot of sense. A lot of nonsense. right. You're bloody well right. You know you got a right to sit.
This is the Northwest Nonsense.
How much longer do we have to sit for this nonsense?
That great moment every day where Lars brings you the cold, hard facts without any liberal wokeness from the Daily Dead, fish wrapper, or mainstream media bias.
I have to admit that not too much that Joe Biden does shocks me anymore. I mean, every crazy idea in the world, everything to destroy this country. So I'm not easily shocked by the things Joe Biden does. But Joe's endorsement this week for keeping pornographic books, especially one pornographic book by a Northwest author in public schools, this one kind of got to me. Let me explain, because I know that otherwise you might not believe it at all. It came in Joe's video announcement yesterday that he's running for re-election. Biden condemned what he called MAGA extremists, who he claims are lining up to take away your freedoms by banning books. Now, you understand, no conservative wants to ban any book. No conservative has proposed banning in a book. But we have said there are some books that are not age appropriate for children, especially in public schools. I mean, if their parents are foolish enough to put this kind of pornography in front of them, I guess they can do that. The public schools should not. Biden's video showed a stack of books that he says are being banned. Again, a lie by Joe. Well, there's a book that you can find in that stack called Lawn Boy. It's still on the shelves of Northwest school districts, and it depicts, brace yourself, among other things, two 10-year-old boys performing oral sex on each other at a church youth group meeting. Yeah, disgusting and certainly not elementary school friendly. Even the guy who wrote the book Lawn Boy, Jonathan Evison from Bainbridge Island, says it's not for kids, and even he says it should not be in the school library. And yet, just last month, parents demanded that West Lynn and Wilsonville schools take Lawn Boy down off the shelves. And guess what the school board did? They said, no, we're not going to do it. We'll study the idea. Now the president condemns Make America Great folks like me for not wanting pornography about sex between 10-year-olds in front of your kids. Joe Biden, the pornographic pedagogy president, what a campaign to run on. Are you going to vote for that? And now today's Daily Grill.
Insane.
Are you completely insane?
Ridiculous.
They get more and more ridiculous.
Flat out dumb.
You're even dumber than I thought.
Who deserves today's Lars Grill of the Day?
Maybe you're just really, really stupid.
Presented by Better Basements and Waterproofing. Water in your crawl space or basement? Call Better Basements and Waterproofing. Don't stop,
grow. Usually I'm not too terribly impressed by the Daily Dead fish wrappers of the Northwest, but in this case, I've got to give some real credit to the Columbian, the Vancouver Columbian, for running this story this week. They point out that about 5 years ago, in September of 2018, Tina Kotek, according to an Associated Press story, Tina Kotek spurs talks about the Interstate Bridge. The House Speaker in question was Tina Kotek. Now she's the governor of Oregon. She says at a transportation forum, quote, she welcomes a renewed commitment from Washington lawmakers who appear ready to start talking about replacing the Interstate 5 bridge connecting the two states. And then the Columbian points out, flash forward to a couple of weeks ago, Kotek, now the governor of Oregon, where she can actually make a difference in that question, told reporters that while she still supports replacing the bridge, she does not support the funding that Oregon lawmakers are considering paying $1 billion as their share of the cost. Quote, I am uncomfortable with the current conversation of $1 billion over the next four biennia in obligation bonding. I think there needs to be some general obligation bonding this session to move forward on our commitment. So when she wasn't in charge, she was all for the idea. Now that she's actually running the show, she's saying $1 billion, that's a lot. Well, it's you liberal nitwits that ran the cost up to an estimated $7.5 billion for a bridge the Coast Guard is not going to approve. They've already said so. It's not high enough to clear river traffic. And of course, the Federal Highway Administration of Joe Biden says you've got to add a lift span to the middle of the bridge. And rebuilding the bridge, at least in part, was to get rid of the lift span because that jams up traffic. And that might raise the cost another $500 million. So Tina Kotek doesn't like the idea of the state of Oregon paying $1 billion of the $8 billion cost of the bridge. Sounds like she was never with it to begin with. Our best email, but you can always send more to talk at LarsLarson.com, comes from Forrest, who signs himself Stuck in Liberal Land, Bellingham. Lars, Joe isn't going to make it through another 4 years, so a vote for Joe is in all likelihood a vote for President Kamala Harris. Trump should immediately start campaigning against President Kamala. I think that's a fantastic idea, Forrest. Thanks, and keep the faith up there in Bellingham. To your calls now. Let's start with, how about we start with Rick in Seattle, listening on KVI. Rick, welcome to the Radio Northwest Network. What's on your mind?
Hey, Lars, thank you for what you do.
You bet.
I am a Washingtonian here and a firearm bearer, and I listened to what Governor Inslee did to Washington State. He's missing.
Oh, so you're a mass murderer in waiting too. You're just a mass murderer waiting to happen.
Well,
right?
I'm a soldier, and I've been to the desert, and I have supported my military, and
thank you for that.
Bearing firearms over there. Now, the whole thing is about intent. A weapon or a firearm cannot have intent. Only people can. And so when he judges the whole state of Washington, intent is removed and placed on the inanimate object of a piece of metal that pushes bullets instead of the person that wants to commit the crime.
Yep.
So it's the whole thing is intent. And he calls the whole Washington state for all mass murders. He's already said that if you own a gun, your intent is to kill.
That's what he said. And
I wonder about
basically,
his bodyguards.
He's defamed you. He's defamed you as well. Oh, I'm sure that his state police contingent that provides his security at great expense, by the way, and it was great expense when he ran for president and they had to travel with him on his abortive attempt to run for president. I'm sure that at least when they're on the ground, usually they carry just a sidearm, but I'll bet most of the time they have access to either semi-automatic or fully automatic weapons when they need them. And yet he's declaring that in the hands of a citizen, that gun is just a mass murder waiting to happen.
Incredible.
It is.
Anyway, Lars, thank you for being the mouthpiece of conservatism, and God bless.
Well, thank you, and God bless you, and thank you very much for your service to America in uniform. Let's go to Dave. Hey, Dave, welcome to the program. What's on your mind? And thanks for joining us on the Radio Northwest Network.
Thanks, Lars. I appreciate it. I was just shocked when you did your poll for the day of what we're really running into now. If you think about that one alone and you think about the 16-block area, I wonder if it includes the Oregon Health System building that's down there. Because ambulances are delivery vehicles, they deliver people, so that means you're going to have to run a gas-powered unit, transfer them to an electric unit, and then take them into the hospital. And what is UPS going to do, and FedEx, and the postal system? Are they going to build a center someplace out of that area and say, you come get your own boxes, because we can't deliver? So
imagine that. Imagine UPS having to say these boxes are being delivered to these addresses, so they must be delivered in an electric vehicle, even though virtually all of the rest of UPS's fleet runs on diesel, and it's sensible. But for downtown Portland, they're going to have to go to zero emissions vehicles. Good luck with that. Dave, thanks for the call from Cottage Grove. Coming up in just a moment, we'll talk about the approval of magic mushrooms in Oregon, and where is that going to go, given the failure of the pot program. You're listening to the Lars Larson Show. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a Wednesday. It's the Radio Northwest Network, and I'm glad to be with you. You can answer our Twitter poll. You'll find it at Lars Larson Show. Should Northwest cities ban gasoline and diesel trucks from their downtown areas? It's a stupid question, but I said no. I wrote the question, by the way. It's the latest crazy thing that Portland has done based on a $2 million bribe from the Biden administration. They're going to ban gasoline and diesel and any but zero emissions vehicles for deliveries, not your personal car, but deliveries in a 16 square block area of downtown Portland. If business hasn't been killed already by the riots and the looting and the murders and the violence and the homeless campers and the drug use, this ought to drive the stake right through the heart of downtown Portland. And apparently Ted Wheeler is embracing it. Now, just as crazy as that is magic mushroom therapy. And Aaron Mesh joins me now, the news editor at Willamette Week, to talk about the story. You can find at WWeek.com. Aaron, welcome back.
Good to be here.
I've been reading about this, but I haven't been that fascinated that apparently there are people who want to be able to take psilocybin mushrooms, and they say it's really great therapy. You kind of doll it up with all the things that are around conventional medical treatment. But $3,500 for a six-hour counseling session? Who needs this? Who can afford it? And does insurance cover it?
Well, I couldn't speak to who needs it. I can tell you insurance does not cover it, and I can tell you that I can't afford it.
$3,500? $500 an hour for this kind of thing? And you characterized, or you profiled Kathy Jonas, who got a license. She had to go through 300 hours of training to get it. That's a lot. And pass a state-mandated test. She has two licenses. It cost her $12,000, and she's going to have to spend tens of thousands of dollars to open up a session. And she says at $3,500 per therapy session, she's barely going to break even in Eugene.
Yeah, so I mean, the thing that is fascinating about this is that you are looking at another regulatory system created by a ballot initiative. So much of Oregon's legal framework at this point is created, especially its tax framework, oddly enough, is created by ballot initiative. It's sort of a copy of California's system. So Measure 109 in 2020 was passed by Oregon voters to supposedly legalize psychedelic mushrooms. What it's really done is it's legalized a very expensive therapy and regulatory system that only a few people can afford to do. And it's training a lot of folks who now have mushroom therapy certifications and no place to perform the clinical work that they've been supposedly trained to do.
Well, see, that's why I started with who needs this? I mean, is it supposed to be good for PTSD or, you know, what? I mean, what kind of person needs this kind of treatment with a non-pharmaceutical, I guess a natural pharmaceutical, if you want to go that far?
Yeah, my understanding, and I'm hesitating a little bit here because I actually don't want to sound scornful about this, despite not being very knowledgeable about it. So my understanding is that it's people have found it to be extremely helpful with depression and suicidal ideation and other various forms of mental distress. And it may very well be the case that that's true. What I'm cynical about, I'm happy to say I'm cynical about it, what I'm cynical about is not that there's any therapeutic use to this. What I find myself feeling skeptical about is what kind of system would make it only affordable to the kind of people who can throw down $3,500 every couple weeks.
Well, I guess if you tell somebody you need 300 hours of training, and let's assume it's, say, $20 an hour, so you're talking about $6,000 for training, and then a couple of licenses at $12,000, and a state-mandated test, and then a security system and liability insurance and a giant safe to hold the drugs and all the rest of that, I can understand why Kathy Jones is charging $3,500 a session and still expects to just break even. But, boy, if you're not depressed when you walk into the session after four sessions and spending $14,000, you're probably just about guaranteed to be distressed or depressed, aren't you?
It would make me depressed, certainly. You know, and a lot of people who have mental illness, it's often pointed out that the number one stress trigger is, in fact, money woes. So I could see this not being tremendously helpful in that way. Also, and this is sort of the point of the story that I want to come back around to, is that, yeah, take a wild gander at how much a bag of magic mushrooms goes for on the streets of Portland.
I have no idea. It's probably pretty cheap. If I mean, most drugs on the streets of Portland or Seattle are cheap. How much does it cost me for 4 grams if I were inclined to buy psilocybin mushrooms?
I think you could easily manage to find them for less than $50, probably close to $25.
So all it is all the state licensing and razzmatazz that jacks it up to be that expensive?
The nicer way of putting that, which I'm not sure where I land on the niceness spectrum here, but the nicer way of putting that would be to say that the medical certifications in order to perform this therapy responsibly chalk up the cost to a point where it's unaffordable by any normal person.
Now, but the medical certification was required by the feds or by the state of Oregon? And I think there's a reason I'm asking that.
The state of Oregon, the feds have nothing to do with this. The feds say this is a Schedule I substance and you should go to jail.
Yeah, okay. But here's where I have the problem, because legalized pot's been around for a while and people know I don't like it, but I accept the vote of the people. Fine. Like you said, a lot of laws are made by the people. But the state of Oregon has been incredibly lax with pot
they don't regulate it much at all, nor the hash oil, you know, and the butane labs that can blow up and kill people or hurt people. And all these things have actually happened. And the cartel labs, and you know, it's a largely unregulated. How is it they went from almost unregulated for pot to then you go to psilocybin, which I assume the users of psilocybin will probably be a fraction of the number of the users of pot. And you say we have to hyper-regulate this one, even though we're making a ton of money on the pot that we barely regulate at all.
Well, again, I think it's in the design of the measure. So it's not as if, and trust me, I come on here all the time and give state bureaucrats in Oregon an incredibly hard time, and they deserve it. Good. A lot of the time. But I don't think in this case that state bureaucrats have put these strictures on the program. In fact, what happened is that the people who designed the ballot measure put these strictures on the program. I spent a lot of time thinking about that because we're in the middle of endorsement season, and this is a shameless plug for the fact that our endorsements are out today.
Yes, they are.
And I'm just struck all the time by how often people come in here with feel-good, poorly designed proposals that... again, the fact that we have an initiative system that means that the laws of this state are often set up by amateurs, rank amateurs, quite frankly, means that a lot of the time the system that we design is intended, no one cares about the process at all. It's all about the money grab or the grand ambition that's going to somehow make life better for everyone. And no one ever cares about the unintended consequences of how it's formulated. The way these things are written makes them work or not work. They make them functional or dysfunctional, and it has to do with things like, will this create a regulatory system so expensive that people are going to go into the black market?
You know what I think is going to happen, Aaron? And I think the reason that if I could find out the true reason they designed the ballot measure that way, if you dress this stuff up to look like real medical care, I mean, I know there are probably people saying, well, my pot is my medicine. Yeah, sure. Just, you know, like granny's rheumatism medicine came in a bottle and tasted like whiskey. Okay. But if you dress it up to look this way, you say, we require all this training and, you know, licenses and all. I think they figure one of these days soon, we'll be able to go to the insurance companies and say, you have to treat this like legitimate medicine, which translates as you have to pay for it. I think they figured out that's where the cash cow is. Get the insurance companies to pay for it. I don't think the pot crowd can get that done, but it may be that the mushroom crowd is going to do it. And I think that's where they were headed. That's Aaron Mesh, news editor. You can find the story on the magic mushrooms at WWeek.com. Coming up in a moment, as long as we're on a booze binge, we'll talk about the big new tax on booze to promote booze. That's coming up next on the Radio Northwest Network. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. We made it today's Twitter poll about delivery of anything to downtown Portland, parts of downtown Portland. 16 square blocks off limits to gasoline and diesel under a city pilot program. I don't even know how that's going to work as a practical matter to tell everyone who delivers or picks up anything in downtown Portland. You can't do it with anything but a zero emissions vehicle, which effectively means an electric vehicle. And then, of course, we've got Jay Inslee's ban on AR-15 signed into effect yesterday, where Jay Inslee says no one needs an AR-15. Well, Steve's on the line from Tumwater listening on KVI and the Radio Northwest Network. Steve, what do you think of that?
Well, I think it's a bunch of BS, and our government's overlooking the larger picture of everything. We are, the citizens, are the main source of our defense.
Yep,
because
especially
if we
now.
If we get invaded by land, we can't wait for the military. It's going to be the civilians defending the country.
Even though, Steve, I think that's unlikely, if you're invaded instead by drug-addicted homeless people and violent people, which we are already invaded by those people, there is a step up in violent crime. You may need that weapon to protect yourself. Steve, thanks for the call from Tumwater. If you want to jump into the best conversation in talk journalism, it's right here every day at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. And vote in that Twitter poll. As I said, the idea has only been applied in downtown Portland for now. And they say it's a pilot program, which means they're going to try to get this thing in and then they're going to start expanding it. And it wouldn't surprise me one little bit to see Spokane and Eugene and the Tri-Cities and Seattle also add this on. A $2 million federal program, barely anything in federal grant terms, that 16 square blocks of downtown Portland are going to be turned into an area where gasoline and diesel delivery trucks are forbidden. They say only zero emissions delivery vehicles will be allowed in those areas. Now, at a guess, UPS comes to my house from time to time. They brought some dog food this morning. UPS serves much of downtown Portland, of course, Seattle, and almost every other place in the Pacific Northwest. Does UPS have electric trucks? I think the company has been bringing on board some electric trucks, especially in bigger cities like New York. Do they have enough to serve the entire downtown area of Portland? That's one question. But the second question is this. Depending on how you slice up downtown Portland for deliveries, does that mean that a truck that is diesel that delivers to a whole bunch of areas and down and part of downtown Portland is now banned from even coming to downtown Portland because, you know, you can't come into the downtown area. Your vehicle is forbidden, which means UPS can only run its electric trucks, for example, or FedEx or any of the other delivery companies. And then you get to the companies that do construction, that do renovation, and those that do deliveries to commercial stores. And if you go through downtown, there's a constant stream of delivery vehicles bringing things to downtown Portland. Does it also mean that in those 16 square blocks, do you have a zero emissions truck that picks up garbage? Has anybody considered that? Or are they going to exempt the garbage trucks? And then the fourth question I've got is this. You say, well, this is only delivery vehicles. How about personal vehicles? For now, the city of Portland is not banning personal vehicles that run on gasoline and diesel. It will allow them. But the reason I say for now, can you imagine the day very soon where the city of Portland says nobody else in America has banned delivery vehicles with gasoline and diesel from their downtown area, so Portland is now going to become the first? Sometimes it's a good thing to be the first, like the first man on the moon or the first this or the first that. Sometimes, like, like Vice President Harris, first of one kind or another, not always a good thing. So is that a good thing? And at some point, will the city say, yeah, you're not allowed to bring your gasoline-powered car, your personal vehicle? They haven't done that yet, let me make it clear. But would they do it? I think they'd do it in a heartbeat just to show how woke and politically correct and climate conscious they are. Today's Twitter poll, should Northwest cities ban gasoline and diesel trucks from their downtown areas? It's brought to you by Ultimate Truck Services, ironically enough. If you rely on trucks for business, Ultimate keeps your biggest assets on the road and running right. Find them at ultimatetruckservice.com. Yesterday, I told you about a lawsuit that was heard before the U.S. Supreme Court a couple of days ago in which the tribes, the Chippewa tribe in particular out of Wisconsin, went before the U.S. Supreme Court. They were being sued by a man because he had borrowed some money from a payday lending company owned by one of the tribes on the reservation, and then he couldn't make the payments, and they began to harass him. So he declared bankruptcy, and they kept on harassing him, and he said, you can't do this under federal bankruptcy law. And what the tribes told the Supreme Court earlier this week was, we are a sovereign nation. The laws don't apply to us. You can't even sue the tribes. And it's going to be interesting to see where the U.S. Supreme Court comes down on that. Now, I want to mention this as well. Taxpayers Association of Oregon points out that Governor Tina Kotek wants to double the liquor surtax in Oregon. It's already high. She wants to make it even higher. And then the industry itself, the distillery industry, wants to take the money that they tax out of people's pockets and use it to promote the alcohol they make. Kind of a sweet deal for the liquor business, and I've got nothing against them. A dumb deal for taxpayers. You're listening to the Radio Northwest Network and the Lars Larson Show. Lars here with a question for you. Why is it that some people aren't as stressed out about the future as you'd think they would be?
The answer? They're probably among the millions of Americans who prepared themselves with emergency food storage from My Patriot Supply. If the worst ever happens, literally millions of American families are already protected from dealing with those empty store shelves. Is yours? Mine is. If not, go to MyPatriotSupply.com right now and grab some emergency food kits, at least one for every member of your family. These kits give you a wide variety of delicious meals that average over 2,000 calories per day. That's what you need. Everything stays fresh for up to 25 years in storage. Order your kits right now by going to MyPatriotSupply.com. Your order ships fast and arrives discreetly in unmarked boxes. Listen, this is something you need to jump on now before the next news headline stuns the world. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com. That's MyPatriotSupply.com. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. We start off with our Twitter poll. Should Northwest cities ban gasoline and diesel-powered delivery trucks from their downtown areas? Portland has announced that they're going to do that with a 16-square-block area. That's 4x4, 16 blocks of downtown. Off-limits to everything except zero-emissions vehicles. I think it's a colossally stupid idea. And people have been asking sensible questions. Does that mean Uber and Lyft have to be electric as well? How about UPS and FedEx? How about the fire trucks? How about the ambulances? They all run on gasoline and diesel, and they're going to be banned from that area? Sounds like a lot of dead people. And if you ever need to do a construction project, try to find the electric-powered cement mixer who is going to bring large amounts of cement to a particular location powered by batteries. Should Northwest cities ban gasoline and diesel trucks from their downtown areas? The Twitter poll at Lars Larson Show and LarsLarson.com on our website, brought to you by Ultimate Truck Services. If you rely on trucks for business, Ultimate keeps your biggest assets on the road and running right. Find them at UltimateTruckService.com. Now, I've been wishing for a long time that somebody would take on the massive increase in crime, both violent and property crimes, that have beleaguered some of the biggest cities in the Northwest, Seattle, Spokane, Tri-Cities, Eugene, and Portland, of course. And now the Portland officials say, hey, we just noticed there's a crime problem. We're going to go out and do a big crackdown. Excuse me for being a little skeptical and not at all trusting of their promise. So I thought I'd get our friend, former District Attorney Josh Marquis, to join me. Josh, welcome back. And what should we make of this promise from Mike Schmidt Show, the DA, and feckless Ted Wheeler, the mayor, that they're going to crack down on crime hard?
Well, it's way after all the horses have left the barns, but it's interesting that it's very targeted, and it's clearly coming from the understandably anguished retail and automotive sales communities who are being devastated. I mean, stealing a car in Portland is, you know, practically an evening sport. You're not going to get pulled over for it. You're not going to get chased. And if by some chance you should fall into the hands of the police, it's extremely unlikely the DA's office will file the charges. We know this because the data about how many cases are being filed is publicly available. And although Multnomah County is more than twice the population of its two sister counties, Washington and Clackamas, both of those counties, each of those counties, is filing more felonies. That's just not practically possible. One possibility, which you're already seeing some propaganda being generated out of Schmidt's former employer, the Oregon Criminal Justice Commission, which I sat on 10, 12 years ago, is a puff piece saying, oh, great news, crime is actually down in Portland. Now, nobody
what?
Could really say that with a straight face.
Hold on. How are they? What kind of math magic are they doing?
Prosecuted.
What kind of math magic are they doing to say that crime is down? Because I know you can play games with numbers.
Well, it's pretty straightforward. If, for example, you tell the police not to even bother to respond to certain kinds of crimes. I personally had that happen to me for a felony that was committed in Portland several years ago. But more importantly, you tell your own deputies, we're simply not going to file these charges, or we're not going to file them as felonies. That's what FBI crime stats reflect. They don't reflect what the victims say. They reflect what the police department or the prosecutor or the more importantly, the courts reflect. So if it isn't filed, it doesn't happen. So what's happening now is apparently there is so much squealing, understandably, going on from, say, the retail industry. Now, think about, I think everybody who lives in Portland probably knows that the odds of a proactive police presence to, say, combat aggressive shoplifting is less than zero. And if you're a small business owner and you've been the victim of even some of these gangs of shoplifters, and you tried to get the DA's office to respond aggressively, you had no luck. So in the face of that, for Schmidt to say, well, we're going to take this on, this looks purely performative. I mean, I'm hoping maybe that he's had a complete change of heart and realizes, you know, that the broken window theory really does work, that the small things do end up turning into the big things. And if you pay attention to, you know, people, you know, stealing stuff, then you eventually stop them from committing armed robberies. But I don't think that's what's happening.
Well, and the other thing you do, Josh, and I mean, I know this is a problem for all kinds of crime, but if you really say we're going to target downtown for car thieves and retail theft, well, the thieves move their activities elsewhere. If they say that's a hot area, I mean, I remember when they used to chase prostitutes around on a major street like Union Avenue, which is now MLK, and they'd leave there and go to 82nd Avenue, and then they'd chase them around on 82nd. If you chase them out of downtown, maybe the mayor gets some political relief out of it. But all it does is push them elsewhere, saying, oh, yeah, they really cracked down on that stuff there. Just do it in a different neighborhood. And with the retail theft, you can go to other neighbor. I mean, you can go to other parts of any city if they're cracking down in one area. And yet you can get the illusion that the city is actually taking account of the problem, right?
Absolutely. And, you know, I've heard and I've used the aphorism about boiling the frog slowly. And it wasn't until I was in Portland last month for a series of appointments, a lunch, a doctor's appointment, a social engagement, an interview I did. And so I was downtown for multiple places. I really had not appreciated. And I say this as someone who has never lived in Portland, but has always really enjoyed it, thought it was a really cool city, you know, to visit. I've never lived there, but everything else. And it's degraded so badly that I really don't believe that the people living there get it. Because, and the easiest way to do this is try to remember what 2013 was like. A lot of things were going on in 2013. Actually, that's the last time that Mike Schrunk was the district attorney. And there were other things going on. But try to imagine various parts of downtown, about Pioneer Square, about Old Town, about the Pearl. And they bear almost no relationship to what exists now.
Yep.
I mean, almost none.
Well, and if they start doing this, but they only target some retail theft and car theft, but they leave all of the other stuff, the camping, the drug abuse, the drug dealing, you know, the drug addiction, the overdoses, and all the and the street people who harass citizens and sometimes assault them, they leave all that there. I don't think they actually give any relief to the retail community. Hey, great. You stopped some thieves, you indicted a few people, but guess what? Our business is still wrecked, and people are leaving left and right. I'll give you the last 20 seconds.
Well, and that's exactly what's happening. You can't, you're playing whack-a-mole unless you're willing, unless the DA and the system is willing to really put their shoulder to the wheel and say, you know, we're not going to tolerate petty crime or other crime, and we're going to do this across the board. And until that happens, we're not going to see any change.
And guess what? They've now got this pilot program going. And, Josh, I couldn't even wrap my head around it. We're going to ban all delivery vehicles that use gasoline or diesel, zero emissions only, in 16 square blocks. And you say, how do you build anything without allowing construction deliveries? How do you operate a retail business without almost daily deliveries of everything that you're selling? And if you ban all that stuff, you're basically driving a stake through the heart of your city. And I would imagine other liberal cities are going to buy into it, too, because the Biden administration is handing out taxpayer dollars to bribe you. Speaking of Biden, how about a specific site for Biden fact checks? That's coming up next. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. I don't like liars. And Joe Biden has been a liar most of his life in politics. And I want to get into something because there's a brand new website that you might actually find handy. I'm going to mention a number of times. I've got no other connection to it other than the fact that I like the idea of a fact check on Joe Biden, because much of the media, which spent huge amounts of time fact checking every single thing that Donald Trump said, when Joe Biden walked into office, the media all of a sudden said, oh, yeah, Joe is here. We don't need to fact check him. Everything he says is true. Even though Joe Biden has a decades-long history of stealing speeches, plagiarism, of telling lies about everything and things that aren't even all that important at the end of the day. He lies about how well he did in school, about a full ride scholarship, about finishing in the top of his class, et cetera, et cetera. He's been apparently lying his entire life. And apparently life has given him the lesson that says it's okay to lie because you lie and you stay in the Senate. You lie and you get elected. You lie and you become vice president. You lie and you become president. Even your election is a lie. I mean, when lies seem to lead to success, I guess that's the system telling you that it's okay to lie. So if you want to check out it, it's factcheckbiden.com. And if you want to join the best conversation in talk journalism, it's right here at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. And if you're a naysayer, we put you right to the head of the line, you know, meaning you go first, because we decided that more than 26 years ago. If somebody thinks that I'm just full of baloney, I'd be glad to be told why. Just make a sensible argument and stick around for a few questions. 866-439-5277. And if you want to vote in our Twitter poll, we put up a brand new question each and every day at Lars Larson Show on Twitter and at LarsLarson.com on our website if you don't want to go to Twitter. Now, about this website, the first line, they just have been stacking them on there. And obviously with Joe Biden, you've got no shortage of material. But the site is called factcheckbiden.com. Couldn't be much easier, factcheckbiden.com. And the one that's at the top, just because it's the most recent one that was added, this one really flummoxes me. Because I know that people lie about all kinds of things. And I know that they lie about, let's get rid of that. I know that they lie about things. People exaggerate the size of the fish they caught, or they might exaggerate the amount of money they make, or the interesting people they've met in their lives. Okay, I understand that. What I don't understand, before I get to some of the more substantial lies that Joe Biden has told, let me start with the most recent one. This is from this week. So what does Joe do? He goes out and gives a speech. And for some reason, he mentions a factoid, and that's the only way I can describe it. He says that he was born in the same hospital where his grandfather had died 2 weeks earlier. I thought, well, it's interesting, but it's not consequential, right? It's not like saying, I suggested to Phil Knight that he might try the waffle iron of his business partner, Coach Brooks. It's not Coach Brooks. Who is his business partner? Now it would slip my mind. But famously, Knight and his first partner in Nike, his partner stole his wife's waffle iron, allegedly, at least so the story goes, and made the first waffle sole. Now, what if you said, yeah, I knew that coach back then. And one day I said, hey, coach, wouldn't it be great if we had shoes that had a bottom on them made out of rubber like a waffle pattern? You know, if you could claim to have come up with the idea. Now, people might call you a liar, but how would they prove it wasn't true? In the case of Joe Biden saying that he was born in the same hospital where his grandfather had died just 2 weeks earlier, you think, well, that's pretty easy to fact check, isn't it? When was Joe Biden born? And when did his grandfather die? Both of those are public pieces of information. Turns out that granddad had died 14 months, more than a year earlier, in Baltimore, Maryland. And where was Joe Biden born? He was born 14 months later in Scranton, Pennsylvania, which is a distance away from Baltimore. So why would he lie about that when it's so easy to check and when there's no significance to the fact that you were born in the same hospital where your grandfather died? He was actually talking to the NABTU Legislative Conference, according to the site. And then he keeps talking about how his policies have reduced the federal deficit by $1.7 trillion. Now, this one is really consequential, and it's flat-out false. Biden's policies have not lowered the deficit. In fact, he's proposing massive new spending and massive new taxes. And take a look at the economic experts who've actually looked at this claim. But he runs around America saying, I've cut the deficit by $1.7 trillion, when in fact, he's done nothing but increase it. Joe Biden has also, on multiple occasions, and we've talked about it on this show, claimed that he, you know, when people say, what did you do between the time you were vice president of the United States and when you became president? He said, well, I was a professor at the University of Pennsylvania. Now, can he say that's true? Well, the University of Pennsylvania, which after they brought on Joe Biden and created the Penn Biden Center, a little think tank, and then they got tens of millions of dollars from the Chinese Communist government. You know, so Joe paid off, Beijing Joe paid off big time for UPenn. He never taught a class. He never wrote a paper. He took $1 million from the University of Pennsylvania. Well, if they got $27 million from the Chi-Coms, why shouldn't Joe get a slice of that? That's how the Biden crime family operates. He literally only visited the campus of the university 9 times in 2 years. But he runs around saying, I was a professor at the University of Pennsylvania. Again, he also has talked about his house in Delaware. I don't know why he brings this up, but he'll say, yeah, well, we've had terrible things happen to a lightning strike. And he says it burned the house down. Well, not quite. He had a small fire in his kitchen, quickly contained by the news reports at the time. And then on 8 different occasions, Joe Biden has made up this really strange story about interacting with an Amtrak conductor, because, of course, Joe was pushing the idea that he wasn't just a senator. I mean, senators are a big deal. They usually fly places. They go to big meetings and fancy parties. But plain old Joe would get on the train every night and go back to Delaware. And he talked about his interaction with his Amtrak conductor that turned out to be absolutely 100% made up, and for no particular reason. When he was trying to promote the idea of industry, he claimed that he had driven a tractor trailer. No, he didn't drive a tractor trailer. He's actually driven one once, and that was at a White House event. He also said that he has traveled 17,000 miles with Xi Jinping, his buddy in Beijing, the communist dictator that runs China. Even the Washington Post said that lie is a Pinocchio. He also talks about he had 30 to 50 visits to Iraq and Afghanistan. We don't know the exact number, but it was not 30 to 50. And here's the thing. Joe Biden dropped out of football while he was going to college. He barely played any college football. He briefly practiced as part of the freshman team, and then his father forced him to quit the team because he was getting bad grades in college. So when he says he could have gone pro, yeah, I guess anybody could have gone. Anybody who can throw a football probably could have gone pro. I guess I could make the same claim, except that I'm not a liar like Joe Biden. You find it at factcheckbiden.com. That's factcheckbiden.com. Your calls at 866-HEY-LARS. Send emails to talk at LarsLarson.com. And you're listening to The Lars Larson Show and the Radio Northwest Network. Welcome back to The Lars Larson Show. Well, last Friday, the U.S. Supreme Court came down with a decision that, while it might have been legally correct, I didn't like it at all. What the court effectively said was, we're not going to stop the Food and Drug Administration from making widely available an abortion pill. And you should know this, I usually surprise people when I tell people this, but about half the abortions, 1 million of them every year in America, are done with medication rather than by a doctor doing it, I guess mechanically would be the best way to describe it, a mechanical abortion versus a prescription abortion. Well, the Supreme Court last Friday said they're not going to block the Food and Drug Administration and freeze or put restrictions back on the usage of mifepristone, which I'm probably mispronouncing, but Arena Grossu will correct me if I am. Arena, welcome back to the program. How are you?
Great. Thanks for having me on, Lars.
Arena is what they call a fellow. She's not a fellow, and that's an issue these days, but she is a fellow with the Center on Human Exception. I just think it's funny with it that they haven't gone after that title as well. But she's one of the fellows at the Center on Human Exceptionalism at the Discovery Institute, and we have a lot of friends there because they talk about life. So let me ask you, I want you to educate me and my audience, or my audience and I, about this subject, because you've got mifepristone, Mifeprex, and misoprostol, the two abortion drugs, and the issue that now where the effort was made to try to make sure that the FDA didn't dramatically expand the access to this. It's already fairly accessible. If a woman is pregnant, she really wants to terminate the pregnancy, she can go see her doctor and get these drugs. Biden's administration wants to make it much more available, make a phone call, have a Zoom visit, never see a doctor in person, get the drugs anyway, kill the baby. That's what they want. And it sounds like that, at least for now, is what they're going to get. But these drugs do kill women, don't they, Arena?
They do, and they, of course, kill children. But just to give some information, so mifepristone is used to stop the woman's lining from being able to nourish the baby, so the baby can't implant or attach, and the baby dies. And misoprostol is used to then expel the baby. And women are basically left abandoned because they have to deliver their own babies, dead babies, in their own homes and in the toilet. So they're basically left abandoned. And the Food and Drug Administration has done this unlawfully from 2000 when they pushed this through with an expedited approval. And in fact, they looked at flawed studies, irrelevant studies, and there are a lot of complications that can happen. And so it's a very dangerous abortion drug. And as you mentioned, about half, actually more than half of abortions in the U.S. are now chemical abortions. And currently there are about 24 states and D.C. that have no restrictions on telemed abortions. So a woman could just call in, Zoom in, and there is no doctor who's looking to see how far along she is, or whether she has any contraindications like high blood pressure or an ectopic pregnancy. And so if she has an ectopic pregnancy, she will die. And in fact, 1 in 50 pregnancies is an ectopic pregnancy. So when you don't have a doctor looking at a woman to see where she is in a pregnancy, there could go a lot of things that could go wrong. And so it really endangers women, and it's lawless. So we're hoping that the lower courts,
And you're right to point out, it kills the baby, no matter what gender, but it could kill the woman. And as you say, the percentage of ectopic pregnancies is not inconsiderable. 1 in 50 is pretty high. But let's go back to the drug itself. Mifepristone basically starves the baby till the baby dies inside the mother. That's horrific all by itself. Is there a plan by the Biden administration saying, well, we really only need misoprostol. All we have to do is tell the mother's baby, body effectively, kick the baby out. It's still alive. And you would kick the baby out below 10 weeks if you've taken it at the right time. And the baby simply dies outside the mother. That's what the plan is, isn't it?
Well, so obviously they have this two-drug regimen to kill a baby. Obviously, if the baby is born alive, then they will run into other issues because obviously if a baby is born alive, that then there should be legal protections. There are legal protections, but there should be more. But one thing to note is that the Food and Drug Administration has lifted restrictions on mifepristone already. So in 2016, they pushed it so that women up to 10 weeks can take it instead of 7 weeks. And they changed the dosing regimen. So they made it smaller doses. So again, it endangers women because it's not as strong of a dose. And then they reduced the number of visits from 3 to 1. And then, of course, in 2021, under the Biden administration, they removed the requirement for the abortionist to physically meet with a woman. And so they've continued to take away any safeguards that protect women. But, of course, abortion is never safe. And chemical abortions are even more dangerous than surgical abortions. 1 in 5 women who undergo a chemical abortion will suffer a complication.
And now, hold on. Arena, I want you to make the point of that because I've had people ask me, 1 in 5, so 20% of the women who take a pill to terminate their pregnancy are going to run into a complication. Is that an accurate number?
Exactly.
Is that backed up?
Exactly. 1 in 5 women will suffer a complication, and it could be severe bleeding, life-threatening infection if the whole baby doesn't come out, the inability to have future pregnancies, and also it requires other treatment, blood transfusions, and potentially even hysterectomy. If she's not seen, she could die if she has an infection. And chemical abortion has a complication rate of 4 times higher than surgical abortions. So again, the chemical abortions are not safe, and the FDA has continued to lift restrictions on chemical abortions. And as you have said, too, the number of chemical abortions has only gone up. And so this is an issue that we will see further as more states continue to limit abortions. They will try to go this route of doing the telemedicine and chemical abortions. And
so because, Arena, really, I know that there are people listening to this who are pro, they call themselves pro-choice. They're pro-abortion, and I'm not. And I understand that. But even for those people who say, well, this, you know, women should be able to do this. But the FDA starts out by doing an accelerated process to approve it 23 years ago. And they approve it under a doctor's supervision and within under 7 weeks of pregnancy. Then the Biden, then they push and say, well, let's do it at 10 weeks and under. So that you let the baby be even older when, you know, but exactly. Still inside a mom. And now they're saying, let's do it at 10 weeks. And let's do it outside without any kind of direct doctor's supervision, a doctor visit before you take it, a doctor visit before you take the second pill. Let's make it even easier than that. And all of this knowing that where the FDA's charge is, make sure drugs are safe and effective. Those are the terms used in the laws that created the FDA. And you're saying if they said it was safe and effective at 7 weeks under a doctor's supervision. And now they're saying, go ahead and let her take it. She doesn't have to see a doctor before, during, or after. And there's a 1 in 20 or 1 in 5 chance that she's going to end up in the emergency room with complications, bleeding heavily, maybe expiring. One last thing. Women have died using these pills. Is that correct?
Yes, women have died. There's studies that show that between 2000 and 2018, 24 mothers died and 4,000 mothers reported harmful reactions to the chemical abortion pill. And that's only through 2018, but the numbers have only gone up in chemical abortions even since 2018. And actually, in 2014, before some of these restrictions were lifted, chemical abortions were 31%. And in just a few years, now they're 54%.
Unbelievable. That's Arena Grosu, who's a fellow at the Center on Human Exceptionalism at the Discovery Institute. Arena, thank you very much. We'll be back in a moment. You're listening to the Lars Larson Show. Coming up on the Radio Northwest Network, homeless get to sue. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you on a Wednesday on the Radio Northwest Network. If you want to jump into the conversation, it's 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. And if you're a naysayer, we'll be glad to put you right to the head of the line. I'm going to do that in just a moment with Bob. First, let me tell you that this segment of the show is brought to you by NickShivers.com. For an instant offer to sell your home immediately, go to NickShivers.com. You pick the closing date. No hassles. NickShivers.com for details. Now, we always like to say we take naysayers first. Bob is one of those. Bob, welcome to the program. And what do you and I disagree about today?
Well, I'm on your discussion of the 16-block area and all this stuff, I think it's a great idea.
Okay, hold on. So everybody else,
Bob, hold on.
Just so everybody else understands, you're talking about our Twitter poll, which is about this new program. Portland has taken $2 million from the federal government, what they call a pilot project, in which they'll take 16 square blocks of down their downtown area, so roughly four or five blocks, and they will make it off limits to all but zero emissions delivery vehicles. Personal vehicles will still be allowed, but if you want to deliver anything there, you must use something other than gas or diesel because it has to be zero emissions. You think it's a good idea?
I think what they should do is ban everything. Police, fire, ambulances, any combustion engines, pumps to put out fires. Completely ban the whole thing. And then when it all goes in the garbage can, they can take and hire police and fire with rickshaws, and they can carry in buckets of water or ambulance services if they need it. And then they can take and show the nation what happens when you decide not to use anything. No oil, no, nothing that burns like that. And they can see what it does to society.
I think that's a great idea because, Bob, that is the question. When they say delivery vehicles only, they're starting small, but this is usually the approach of government. Get the camel's nose under the tent. What about ambulances? Those, I don't know of a single electric ambulance. There may be one, but not in Portland that I know of, not in Seattle that I know of, not in Spokane or Eugene or Medford or anywhere else. You don't have those vehicles. And when you think about the kind of things that have to be taken into a downtown, when you're remodeling a building, any kind of substantial remodel, the stuff comes for that remodel in diesel-powered trucks, diesel and sometimes gas, but more often diesel. And so these are all going to be off limits in that neighborhood. No remodeling, no rebuilding. And then when it comes to deliveries, you know, if you've ever walked in, and I used to get off when I worked in TV, I got off the work at about 11 o'clock at night. And a lot of times I'd do my grocery shopping because the grocery store was open, but it was virtually empty. And I'd walk through and there were people in there, half a dozen people with pallet jacks, and they're loading stuff on shelves. And you think, I wonder what happens, you know, if they have, say, a 1 week pause in deliveries. The store could get pretty well emptied out because every single night they were putting things on, and I mean huge amounts of huge quantities of things on shelves. And all of that stuff arrives in trucks. And I don't know of any system for delivering an electric truck. So if you're running the Starbucks or the McDonald's or anything else, and all of a sudden they tell you all of the other McDonald's outside of this 4-square block area can receive deliveries from a diesel truck, what does it take to arrange that just the stuff for that store or a few stores inside the no emissions zone, what does it take to arrange their delivery in some kind of electric truck? And I think, well, right. It sounds pretty close to impossible, doesn't it?
Right, right. And there's one other thing. These people that want to push this, I'm outside the 16 block area. Why should I be billed and charged for things that they have? If they want to do that, have the shipping company send them the surtaxes, surcharges, and all that stuff, and they can pay extra instead of the general public.
I agree. And think about this, Bob. People in big cities get used to services like FedEx and UPS, but they also get used to Uber, to Lyft, to Uber Eats, to Grubhub, and all these other services. When big cities, and I don't think Portland will be the last, I expect Seattle to follow on right behind them. Imagine when you say, well, you can have an Uber service, but you can't operate in that area unless you're driving a $60,000 Tesla or some other expensive electric car. They're all more expensive than the comparable gasoline car. I don't think you're going to find it. And then if they're really hardcore about it, if they're saying, and this is, these are some of the detailed questions that I don't have the answer to yet, but I'm going to get them. If you're driving an Uber and you need to take somebody from A to B and you're driving a gasoline powered Uber and you're outside, you pick up your passenger outside of the zone and they say, well, I'd like to be delivered inside the no-go zone. Are they allowed to take you in there and drop you off? I would suspect they're not. Or what if you need the shortest route from A to B outside the no-go zone is through the off-limit zone? Are you allowed to even transit through it in a gasoline or diesel-powered vehicle? I suspect you won't be, and you'll risk a ticket. So they're going to tell all the people who deliver Uber, Uber Eats, Grubhub, Lyft, and Uber Rideshare, you're going to tell all those companies, just don't bother picking up or dropping off. What would be really interesting, if those companies wanted to help us defeat this, you know what I think they should do? Since the city has announced this, if Uber and Lyft and Uber Eats and Grubhub would all say, we're now going to lock that area of downtown Portland out of our maps. No driver will get a pickup there. No customer who's trying to get an Uber or a Lyft or Grubhub or anything else. You just won't get picked up and you won't get delivered to. And do that for a few weeks and say to those people, if you want this to change, call City Hall and tell them to change it. That might get their attention. You're listening to the Lars Larson Show.
Oregon Utility Notification Center wants to remind you that whether you're planting a tree, building a fence, or just making improvements around your farm or home, click or call before you start your work to get the area marked. Then dig safely and avoid contact with buried utilities. You owe it to yourself and your loved ones. Know what's below. Call before you dig. For more information, visit us online at digsafelyoregon.com.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. I think the rest of the 50 states, that would be 48 if you're a regular American or 56 if you're an Obama or Biden fan, because they seem to think there are more states in America than just the 50. But if you're living in the other 48 states, maybe you should think about paying a little bit of a thank you to Oregon and Washington for trying a dangerous and deadly experiment to show what doesn't work. And what I'm talking about is Oregon and Washington, for different reasons and by different mechanisms, legalizing hard drugs. Because, after all, what could possibly go wrong when you legalize fentanyl, heroin, cocaine, methamphetamine, and all of that, and you make them de facto legal in both Oregon and Washington, and then just stand back and watch what happens. And we've been watching what happens. You pile up the body bags. You have a lot of people who overdose. Some of them die. You have an awful lot of criminal activity that's associated with the drug sales, you know, because the undocumented pharmacists, the sellers of all those drugs, they tend to settle their disputes with firearms instead of some other manner. So we look to the legislature, both Salem and Olympia, and we say, do something about this problem. And I hate to say it, he's been part of the solution rather than part of the problem. And that's Washington State Senator John Braun, who joins me now. But Senator Braun, nothing much got done, did it? Senator? I thought he was there. Senator Braun not there? I can hear him breathing. I'll tell you what, Dusty, would you check? I thought that was a great introduction for Senator Braun, and then he's not there. But I don't know. Maybe the Democrats dragged him off to a corner to beat the tar out of him for saying that they've done something wrong. Is he back? Senator Braun, how are you?
Hey, Lars. I don't know what happened. We just dropped off, but I'm back. Thanks for having me.
I'm glad to have you back. I was just telling the audience, this terrible experiment of de facto drug legalization is literally killing people in both Oregon and Washington. We expect the so-called leaders, the representatives of the people in both of those capitals, Salem and Olympia, to do something about it. Did anything much get done during this legislative session?
No. I think the majority of Democrats in the legislature absolutely failed on this topic, and we worked with them. We worked in good faith, and as I think you know, we got an okay bill, not a perfect bill, but a bill that would work out of the Senate on a bipartisan basis. But in particular, the House Democrats simply refused to work with Republicans, who refused to acknowledge the concerns of the cities, of the prosecutors, of law enforcement, and ultimately, on the very last day of the 105-day session, offered a bill for a vote on the floor of the House that failed dramatically. It was an absolute failure by, in particular, the House Democrats.
So on the last day, the Democrats made a proposal and the Democrat majorities in the legislature couldn't get it passed?
That's right. And they had to have known this. They knew days before, because they have a lot of folks on the far left that their goal is to fully legalize these hard drugs. They are indifferent to the death and destruction they're causing in their very own districts, in their very own cities. They want to legalize hard drugs, so they wouldn't vote for any bill. To get a bill that did anything useful, they had to work with Republicans, and the House Democrats just refused to work with Republicans on this issue.
Okay, because what we're talking about here is a law in both Oregon and Washington, possession of drugs is a serious matter. You were proposing that it become a gross misdemeanor. And then a judge could say, would you like a conviction for a gross misdemeanor, or we could wipe it out if you're willing to go into treatment? And I've pointed out time and again, that was successful for decades in getting people to take treatment, which is what the Democrats say they want. They weren't willing to go for that. What would it have taken them to push them across the finish line on that one? Did they tell you?
No, really. They refused to talk for most of the last 2 days. And we know what they did pass out earlier in the session with just Democratic votes. It was a simple misdemeanor, but it was even worse than that. It was a simple misdemeanor that was virtually impossible to prosecute. They were calling it a misdemeanor, but for all practical purposes, what they voted out would have legalized drugs, much like our current law, which is a misdemeanor, but it hasn't been prosecuted for 2 years because it's too hard. It doesn't work. That's what they want. They'd hide behind a pretend bill that would have done nothing to stop the massive rate of overdoses in our state over the last 2 years.
Well, and here's the thing. When you say it's really hard, I know there are citizens who say, well, guess what? You're in the government. Your job is to serve the public. You should do the hard thing. But are you talking about the last scheme, as I understood it, said you could be prosecuted for possession, but if on your second or third go round? But that would have required every police agency, every time they found somebody who was in possession of hard drugs, to document that fact, even though they're not going to charge them with anything, and then keep track of all those earlier encounters. And when you get to two or three or whatever the magic number was, then you could actually bring even the simple misdemeanor charge. Is that about what they were proposing or what's in place right now?
Yeah, it was a slightly different version than what's in the law now. But what I meant by hard is virtually unenforceable. They couldn't take action on it. There's no way to bring people for a charge and use that charge as leverage to get them into treatment. It hasn't worked for the last 2 years. What they've proposed so far would be the same. And so what I meant by hard is simply it would not work. It was no way to execute on the plan.
And Oregon had this idea. They said, well, we'll throw hundreds of millions, literally hundreds of millions of pot dollars, pot tax dollars, at treatment, and we'll make treatment affordable. When they flushed all that money in, most of the treatment outfits said, we don't even know how to spend this money. And many of the state agencies couldn't figure out how to spend the money. So it's not as though there's a lack of money or even necessarily a lack of treatment, but we're not getting the police to refer people in and get them to actually go, because the druggie says, you mean there's no punishment if I don't go to treatment? Fine, I won't go to treatment. And to a large extent, Oregon cops have literally written tens of thousands of tickets, which are forgivable if you make a phone call to a treatment center and just talk to them about treatment, not if you take treatment. And most of the people don't even bother to make the phone call. And I suspect the same system is in use in Washington State. So why would anybody go into treatment even if at some point they want to become drug-free?
You're exactly right. That's what's happened, is people, you know, they take the least path of least resistance, and they're not entering treatment. I mean, it's sad because, you know, people just don't wake up one day and say, or most people, I shouldn't say it absolutely never happens, but most people don't wake up and say, hey, I'm going to go into treatment and try and kick this addiction that's ruining my life and the life of my family ruining my community. It just doesn't happen. You need some leverage. And we know it works because we've had drug courts at the felony level in the state of Washington for years that have been effective in saving people's lives because it got them into treatment, got them past their addiction, and got them back to a civil, you know, reasonable life. That's what works. And the Democrats, in particular the House Democrats, are not willing to understand that, and they're costing people's lives as a result.
Unbelievable. Senator Braun, thank you very much. I appreciate the effort. I mean, I'd love to talk to one of the Democrats, and Senator, we appreciate you coming on the show. I'd love to get one of those Democrat lawmakers from Washington State. I live in Washington State. Come on this show and tell us, how high do we have to pile the body bags of the dead adults and children who are dying from drug overdose, and the ones dying in shootouts between drug dealers? How high do the body bags have to go before you'll act? Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. I want to grab some of your phone calls, and then I want to tell you about a crazy situation involving some students who decided to wear just a T-shirt that had a political message on it. Now, the thing is, schools do have a right to restrict what students do inside of a public K-12 school if it's going to be disruptive to the classroom environment. But apparently, there's a whole new definition of disruptive, because these days, even the teachers are putting up political messaging like Antifa, Black Lives Matter, gay pride, this, that, and the other thing. And you say, well, it's either good for everybody or it's good for nobody. You either allow that kind of political speech inside the walls of the school or you don't. And if the school decides to display a double standard to the students, that's one of the worst lessons they could ever teach them. In any case, glad to have you with me. If you want to join the best conversation in talk journalism, it's right here at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. Ellie is on the line. Hey, Ellie, welcome to the program. What's on your mind today?
Hi, Lars. Thank you for taking my call. I wanted to talk about the abortion pills. One of the major reasons that women should see doctors before they take birth control pills or any other kind of pill is because of, number one, complications that may occur. Number two, there could be contraindications with any other medication. And thirdly, especially for young women, they often don't know their own health history. My kids were calling me into their 20s asking me, Mom, did I have measles? Did I get the measles shots? Did I have chicken pox? They were into their 20s because they don't know their health history. So I predict that if this passes, and I suspect there's an age limit on getting the pills from the doctors without a prescription, that the younger people will not be able to get it. Therefore, a black market will develop so that younger women can get it, which is even more dangerous.
Okay, but Ellie, I'm confused a bit. Do you think, what we have right now is, as of last Friday's Supreme Court decision, they have said the FDA was okay, at least for now. They can hear it in the lower courts, and it may come back to the Supreme Court. But in the meantime, the Biden administration's plan to make abortion pills even more widely available, to where women don't have to go to the doctor. Typically, you'd get 3 visits to the doctor, as I understand the process. Mm-hmm. You'd go see your doctor and say, I'm pregnant. He'd say, how long have you been how long is the pregnancy, do you think? If it's under 10 weeks, the doctor could say, you're eligible for the abortion pills, these 2 pills, but we need to check and make sure it's not an ectopic pregnancy, which is another problem, blood pressure, which is another problem, you know, of the ones you mentioned, as well as other medications you're taking and things like that. This would wipe that out and say a young lady could call a phone number, have a Zoom visit by video, and get the pill that way with no physical visit with the doctor, no physical exam. No direct blood pressure taken by the doctor or examination to determine if it might be an ectopic pregnancy. 1 in 50 is an ectopic pregnancy. And then you end up with a young lady who's taking a medication that was licensed by the FDA to be prescribed under a doctor's supervision. And originally only for women up to 7 weeks in pregnancy. Now they've gone to 10 weeks. Now they want to go without the doctor visits at all. And I'm really concerned about this, that people understand what they're doing, that they're literally going to kill some women, and that women have already died. If somebody says, Lars says, somebody might die, and life might kill you. Yes, you're right. You can die from a whole bunch of different things. But in this case, they're saying, we're going to make it more likely that women are going to die, because some of the things a doctor might say, it turns out your particular situation, you're not eligible because it could literally kill you, or you have an ectopic pregnancy and that will kill you if you take the abortion pill, that all of that is tremendously dangerous. And what I, for the life of me, can't understand is the Biden administration says it's not available enough. They're doing over 500,000 abortions a year. With 540,000 abortions a year with pills already. And you say that's not available enough. So are you saying it should be made more available? And that if we don't, there will be a black market? Right now, the status quo right now is the pills are available and the Supreme Court refused to block that.
Okay, what I'm saying is I think women should see a doctor. And of course, I'm also saying that young women in particular should go with their parents to see a doctor. But you have to remember, Lars, that this particular administration, the Biden administration, doesn't even know who women are. So therefore, how can they say anything about women? They can't even identify us. So this administration doesn't care about women. They only care about politics.
No, and what's sad about, Ellie, when you think about the fact that the Biden administration very quickly, early on, stocked up with transgender people, which I think is an insult to biological women, to say, if I shave my face, change my hair, put on different, clothing, that I could say I'm a woman now. And I think that's an insult to real women. And yet to the point where at the beginning of the show, you hear the introduction to the show, we've got that Joe Biden soundbite where he says, well, over half of the women in my administration are actually women. And that's true. He actually said that. We didn't do any clever editing. When you have to say more than half the women in my administration are actually women, that's stunning. And women... if the Biden administration cared about women, among other things, in the last couple of weeks, the president would not have said, I'm going to veto a bill if it comes to me to protect both children, girls, and adult women from having to compete against biological men in sports competitions in both high school and college that, by the way, are, if you say, well, it's just sports, who cares? Well, if you're trying to get a scholarship to go to a university and you're a great swimmer, or you're a great golfer, or any of the sports that you might play, but you're a young lady, and now you're going to have to come up against young men who are calling themselves ladies and say, well, you mean my scholarship may be at risk? Yeah. You may get beat at, say, swimming, just like Leah Thomas, who's a biological male, managed to beat some women who were real women. And you say, well, if he knocks them out of competition, does that mean they may not get a scholarship? That's exactly right. And to say,
right.
I think it's a height of insult to say a woman is just, we can take a man, put him in a dress, and he's a woman. And that's the same as a woman. I agree with you. When Ketanji Brown Jackson, the woman you were talking about, who's now sitting on, for God's sake, the Supreme Court of the United States, was asked, can you tell me what a woman is? And she said, I'm not a biologist, so I can't tell you what a woman is. When a woman in the Biden administration, or who appointed by the Biden administration to the Supreme Court, can't even define what a woman is, and she is a woman, you know we're in trouble. I'll give you the last 30 seconds.
And I agree with everything you said. I think still this goes to the health. This goes to health. And the Biden administration and the liberals on the left, of course, like to portray Planned Parenthood and abortion clinics as health care. They're not health care because they don't care about health. Health is not what they're doing. This goes to absolutely denying women health care. This is taking away their health care. This isn't giving it to them.
No, when Planned Parenthood murders 300,000 human beings, and half of those human beings are little girls, they can't exactly say they're pro-women. Ellie, thanks very much. I appreciate the call. Glad to get your calls at 866-HEY-LARS. You're listening to The Lars Larson Show and the Radio Northwest Network. Welcome back to The Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you, and I'm always glad to get to your phone calls and emails at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. And if you want to vote in our Twitter poll, you can always find the Twitter poll at Lars Larson Show on Twitter. And if you don't want to go to Twitter, some don't, even still with Elon Musk in charge, you can always find it at our website at LarsLarson.com. Although, don't act like Democrats. Just vote once in the Twitter poll if you don't mind. Again, you can find it at Lars Larson Show and at LarsLarson.com. I got to tell you something. There is some crazy stuff going on. Joe Biden has been the number one aider and abettor of child trafficking in the world. And the cartels, the Mexican drug cartels, have made literally billions of dollars by trafficking children across the border with the aid and assistance of Joe Biden. And there are efforts to try to stop that. Now, not from the Democrats, but from the Republican side of the aisle, there are people who would like to stop what's going on there. And one of them is Senator Marsha Blackburn, who represents the great state of Tennessee. Senator Blackburn, welcome back to the program. Senator? Well, heck. Ms. Blackburn? Senator Blackburn? Oh, let's check that line again. I don't know if she's in tough sell territory, but well, here's what she did while we're lining that call back up. Senator Blackburn introduced legislation, and what it would do is authorize $50 million in aid to state and local governments, along with some non-governmental organizations, to combat the smuggling of young women and girls. It's called the Stopping the Abuse, Victimization, and Exploitation of Girls Act. The Save Girls Act seeks to stop the trafficking and the smuggling of vulnerable women across this country, in particular, those who've been brought illegally across the U.S.-Mexico border, although the act itself does not say this is limited to stopping trafficking only if it's people who are brought in across our border. It would be any trafficking of women and girls for prostitution, for pornography, for sexual abuse. This stuff has to stop. And the legislation is actually so sensible that it got buy-in from across the aisle. Senator Amy Klobuchar, a member of the Senate I don't often agree with, Democrat of Minnesota, she's actually said, okay, I'll support the bill as well. And what they're trying to do is combat the problem that to a large extent has been created by Joe Biden. By Joe Biden and his wide open borders policy, allowing people to be trafficked illegally across that border. Now, the cartels are making money several different ways. They get drugs across the border. That makes money. They get people across the border just across into the United States. And, of course, they traffic women and girls. Senator Blackburn, welcome back to the program. How are you?
I am doing great. I'm so happy to be talking with you.
Well, I just described for my audience what the Save Girls Act is and what it does. it's kind of sad. I mean, I just want to throw this in parenthetically, that we actually have to spend huge amounts of money to combat trafficking that we might better stop in large part by just having a secure border. But since we can't have that, we have to save these girls. Would you mind helping my audience understand what this would actually do?
Yes. Your summation is exactly right. We have teens and women and girls that have come across the border. Now, it is important to note that our unaccompanied alien children have the entry, illegal entry of those have increased 400% in the last 2 years. And many of these children have been turned over to individuals that are there to host them, house them, but HHS cannot find them. They have lost 85,000 children, and some of these have been put into bad work situations. Some, we don't know if they're dead or alive. There are others. They don't know if they are being trafficked or if they are with gangs. And so this is ending up being an issue that local and state law enforcement and nonprofits have to handle. So my legislation would allow those grants and funds to actually go to the people that are doing the work. Your local and state agencies and your nonprofits that are doing this.
I mean, for example, am I wrong in connecting this to some of the stories we've heard in the last 2 months about children being found working in meatpacking plants and other kinds of jobs? I'm all for having kids learn how to work when they're kids, but not in a meatpacking factory, not because it's unpleasant, but because it's dangerous and it's work for adults. And there's a reason we put that off limits to kids. And yet we've seen a big increase in the number of kids found in adult jobs working in meatpacking plants and other kinds of ag operations. Why? I assume because they're in there working to make money to support their families, because their families came in with not a lot, you know, in their pockets and not a lot of ability to make money. So they put their kids to work the way they might have back at home in their home country. Is that a correct estimation of it?
Right. And see, the thing that is so horrific about this is sometimes these people who choose to sponsor these children are actually the owners of businesses that are then putting these children into dangerous work conditions. It is not the parent. It is the fact that the Office for Refugee Resettlement has turned these children over to individuals who are offering to sponsor these kids and house them so that they can use them as labor.
So for the cost, Senator, if I could sum it this way, for the cost of a few meals and a spare bedroom or a place to sleep, you're getting a full-time slave.
You're getting that person that you can put them to work in these facilities. These kids are not going to school. These kids are going to work. And HHS has lost track of a lot of these kids. Like I said, 85,000 kids. They cannot find these kids. And
they were forced to admit that under oath before Congress, weren't they, just about a week ago?
Well, that was during our hearing when I asked Secretary Becerra from HHS if he was familiar with this, the fact that they had lost 85,000 children. And he claimed he had never heard that number and was not aware of any of this. Which, how do you lose 85,000 kids and don't know anything about it?
Well, I mean, because he's in charge of the agency who the kids are handed off to. I mean, I've had plenty of people, Senator, who have complained. They say, well, when these kids come into the country with adults who may or may not be their parents, they're separated from their parents. And I said, of course they are. If American police in a community find, you know, kids with adult parents who are criminals, you arrest the criminal, take them to jail, and you put the kids in the hands of social services. It's his agency that has direct responsibility for these kids. And we've seen the numbers before. How could Becerra be unaware of this?
It is I cannot even think of a situation where he would be unaware of this. And I don't know if it's willful ignorance or if it is not wanting to admit that they have made a mess of this program.
I think you're absolutely right. Senator Blackburn, thank you so much for the time, and thanks for what you do for the people of the great state of Tennessee. I appreciate the time. Now, if somebody wants to be a naysayer on that, I'd be glad to take the call. Can you imagine 85,000 kids that are in your care? You have no idea where they are. Kids being put to work in adult jobs, and of course, kids being abused and trafficked for sex and pornography and everything else. We'll be back in just a moment. You're listening to the Lars Larson Show and the Radio Northwest Network. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a Wednesday. It's a pleasure to be with you. This is the Radio Northwest Network, and we have about 24 stations that serve the Pacific Northwest states, Oregon, Washington, and Idaho. We have for more than 23 years. We're glad to keep right on doing it for another 23 to come. This segment is brought to you by the home power generating folks at ProTech Power. Make sure your loved ones are safe when the power goes out. 541-ONA-GEN. That's 541-ONA-GEN. Our Twitter poll today: should Northwest cities ban gasoline and diesel trucks from a part of the downtown area? In this case, the city of Portland has accepted a $2 million bribe from the Biden administration to block off 16 square blocks of downtown Portland. That area will become, hasn't yet, but will become a zero emissions delivery only, meaning you can still drive your passenger car. You can still drive your passenger truck, and it can be powered by gasoline or diesel. But if you want to do deliveries within these 16 square blocks, you will not be able to use anything but a zero emissions vehicle, meaning an electric vehicle, I guess, because even natural gas powered vehicles are not zero emissions. So I would imagine that Seattle will probably follow this craziness quickly. Should Northwest cities ban gasoline and diesel trucks from their downtown areas? I'd say no to that. And I'd also predict that it won't just be part of the downtown. They will expand it to the entire downtown. And then they'll say, oh, and by the way, we're either going to charge you for driving your gas or diesel powered passenger car or truck into the downtown. They haven't done that yet. Or we're going to charge you a fee. There are already some cities on Earth that charge you a lot of extra money, 15 or 20 bucks, to drive your gasoline or diesel powered car into London, central London at least. Never been there, but it sounds like a crazy idea and a great way to ruin businesses. In any case, our Twitter poll is found at Lars Larson Show and at LarsLarson.com. Brought to you by Ultimate Truck Services. If you rely on trucks for business, Ultimate keeps your biggest assets on the road and running right. Find them at UltimateTruckService.com. Let's go to your calls. And if you want to jump in, it's 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Victor, what's on your mind today?
Hi, Lars. Our open borders is definitely a breaking of constitutional law. Now, if the president won't uphold it, doesn't it drop down to someone lower in office that's taken an oath to uphold the Constitution to uphold that law? And then if they won't uphold it, it goes down to a lower office?
No, and I'll tell you why. There have been court decisions over the years, quite some time ago, roughly more than 100 years ago. The states did take a role in immigration issues. And then the courts found that immigration is the sole province of the federal government. It used to be that Texas could grant you citizenship or other states could grant you citizenship, and then you were effectively a citizen of the rest of the country. It made no sense to do it that way because deciding whether you're or not you're allowed to come into any part of the United States is the job of the federal government. Once you're inside the United States with the approval of the federal government for the entire country, then you're allowed to go anywhere in America you want. I mean, there are places in Europe where you might need credentials of one kind or another to travel from one country to another. But in the United States, you can get in your car and drive from Seattle all the way to Tampa, Florida, without any kind of legal restrictions. So the states have zero role in enforcing immigration law. And in fact, during the Obama administration, Arizona had said to the Obama administration, if you're not going to enforce the border laws and the immigration laws, then we will do it. And they got themselves hauled into court and the court decided, the federal courts decided, Arizona as a state, any state of the 50, has no role in enforcing immigration law. So they have no business doing it. Now, do I think that when Joe Biden took an oath, and part of that oath is to protect and defend the Constitution, but the important part here is the one where he says, I will faithfully execute the laws of the United States. Well, we have laws that say there are ways to come into America legally, and if you don't do it legally, you're not welcome here. Those are our federal immigration laws. Joe Biden took an oath to faithfully execute those laws, but people, the next question people usually ask is, well, if he's not faithfully executing laws, how do we enforce that? And the answer is two ways. One, impeach the sucker, or two, throw him out at the next election if you're very patient and you want to wait that long. So, those are the choices we have. Now, Republicans have made a lot of noise about impeaching Joe Biden, about impeaching Mayorkas, about impeaching Becerra. Almost every member of Joe Biden's cabinet should be impeached based on their malfeasance in office. The Republicans have not yet grown a spine to actually take that vote. And shame on them, because they talked about those things, about saying, we're going to hold, Secretary Mayorkas, the Homeland Security Secretary, to account for this. They have not. We're going to hold Joe Biden to account, and they have not. So as an American, what would you tell them? Because this is not just a Joe Biden problem. It's a problem that the Republicans have gone spineless, as they so often do.
Well, in other words, the states and the people have to lay spineless and helpless while our government can bring us into being enslaved and totally destroy the nation. We just lay spineless because somebody made
not the spineless. The Victor, if there were a way for the states to take a proper role in immigration, I'd be all for it. But you don't want a state being able to decide on immigration matters. If you did, some of the blue states like California and New York would say, come on in, we'll let you in, we'll tell you you're legally in America, and they would simply grant citizenship. They don't have that right.